I call this meeting of Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, May 23rd. It's 9:30, and we are in the Commissioners' Meeting Room 108 in the Lincoln County Courthouse. First item on our agenda is to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present. Next item would be adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature or items that have come before the commissioners before. If there's no item a commissioner or staff wish to highlight, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
I move approval of the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
I said aye, but I'm glad I helped.
Thank you. Motion carries. Three votes in favor. Next item is a public hearing on the legalization of Ocean View Drive. I'll open the public hearing, and I believe the first part will be information or presentation by staff.
Commissioners, this is a continued public hearing on the legalization of Ocean View Drive in Yahats. And this is a matter we've been working on for several months in order to accomplish a transfer of kind of the remnants of the County Road 804 to the city of Yahats for their use. It's the entire right-of-way lies within the city limits of Yahats. And we've been dealing with this issue for a number of years, and this is sort of the culmination of trying to get this together. As you may recall, at the city's request, we've been working with property owners out there to see if there's a way we can actually accomplish all the things we need to do before we do the transfer without actually undertaking the legalization. And we've gotten made a lot of progress in that area. We've identified areas in which we can do easements in lieu of legalization that actually then comports with some of their planning requirements. We've had this discussion several times in the past, but it looks like it's coming to fruition. In fact, I understand that the Yahats planner and staff are meeting with one of the last property owners today to see if we can't put this together. So what we would need to do today is to ask for another continuance of this hearing to see if we can't wrap this up, and I want to give us ample time to get it taken care of. So I'm requesting that you make a motion to continue this hearing to 9:30 a.m. in this location on August 1st, 2018.
All right. Do we call for public testimony?
At this particular point, is there anybody here on the Ocean View Drive matter? I don't think anybody's here.
Okay, so we did have, for the record, we asked for public testimony, and Everybody is here to comment on that. So I'll entertain a motion.
I would move that we continue this hearing to August 1st, 2018, 9:30 a.m. at this location.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Closed public hearing. Next, we have some decision and action items, and for the record, we will be having a report by Amy Chapman of our public health area on biosolids, and that will be under item 9A, elected official department directors, program coordinators, and consultant reports. And back to decision items. First item is an order on the rate schedule for Dahl disposal.
Commissioners, you had a report and presentation made on behalf of Dahl disposal, which has actually has franchise areas in the South and East County outside the cities of Toledo, Siletz, Walport, and Yahats, and got a great deal of information, and you asked that we move forward with an order to establish a new rate effective July 1, 2018. There was something a little bit different with this particular proposal, as they also have proposed, and we were waiting to see what the cities, especially the cities of Yahats, Walport, and Toledo would do with a new service that they're looking at, which is a curbside compostable service or yard debris service. And we got confirmation that, actually this morning, that they have completed their rounds with each of the cities, and the cities are adding these new services. And so we wouldn't have added these in the unincorporated areas unless they were available within the cities. It didn't make any sense there. And so what we have is two separate orders here. The first would establish the new rates for the regular service effective July 1, 2018. And the second would establish the rates for the new service and also make that effective July 1, 2018.
And these are items that have come before the commissioners previously.
Yes.
And also note that while the Doll Disposal new service of compostables is new for them, it's a service that Thompson Sanitary in the Newport Mid-County area has been providing for, I think, a couple of years.
Several years.
Yeah, several years now. So comments or questions from the commissioners? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Counsel, do you want us to do these as three separate motions?
Yes, and then I guess I can talk about the third one, is Thompson's at the same time. And all the franchise haulers in the county have commented and done presentations as they do annually on the rates and ask for adjustments, which are approved. And so Thompson's also came at the same time, and we've got their rates. They have also had that rate approved by the city of Newport. So, three separate orders. What we're doing is one order for the general rate for Dolls, one for the new service, and then the rate for Thompson's. That's right, three orders.
We'll do them each individually. Okay. And again, I'll note that these rate increases have been approved by the cities that are in the service area. So I'll entertain a motion.
I'd move to approve the new rate schedule for Doll Disposal.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Next motion.
I would move to approve the rate schedule for Doll Disposal's new compostable service.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries. Third motion.
I move for approval of the new rate schedule for Thompson Sanitary Service.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. All right, now we'll move on to a discussion and information item, and this is declaring the shoulder of Three Rocks Roads a no parking zone. I believe we have Director of Public Works, Roy Kenyon, here. And for the record, Roy, identify yourself. Mm-hmm. For the record, please identify yourself.
I'm Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director, and what I'm here in front of the board today for is to ask for an order to be able to allow the County Road Department to post a section of the shoulder adjacent to Knight County Park at the end of Three Rocks, a no parking zone. From what I understand, in order for the signs to actually be enforceable, it takes an order to do so. Kind of the background on this is Knight Park is a county park at the end of Three Rocks Road, which is just north of the Salmon River on the north end of the county. This time of year, it's a fairly quaint little quiet park, but when the salmon are running, it kind of gets to be a madhouse because we have multiple things going on there. We have a boat launch that basically the parking lot was built to accommodate the boats and trailers and whatever. There's a parking lot kind of to the northeast, the single car parking that was actually built kind of for an overflow. And because of the widespread use, the rest of everybody else kind of fends for themselves and they park wherever they can find a spot. This here is the single car parking. There's actually long stalls here that were designed for boat trailers. Long stalls here that were designed for boat trailers. As you can see in this picture, which I wasn't going to mention, but you can see that there's actually cars doubled up in these parking stalls that are designed for boat trailers. And so that's kind of been kind of the issue. I hate to do this because we're actually going to lose a little bit of room for the overflow parking. But what the overflow parking problem is, it's causing a blind spot here as you access out onto Three Rocks from the park. And then this, as you go on up Three Rocks Road, this shoulder narrows to the point where people that actually are parking there are utilizing a portion of the travel way. This road is a lane and a half at best. And so
we kind of get basically a lot of congestion in here. I feel that, I don't know, multiple calls over the last few years about this area. And so I felt that to be on the safe side, I'd like to post a 50-foot section here. And if you look at your picture, you can see, I took a picture of right at the end of the pavement. And you can kind of see a dip in the shoulder, and then there's some alder trees. And so basically that area that the dip in the shoulder is, that's going to be posted no parking. Then there's actually 100 feet there that is adequate, has adequate width for parking, and will actually allow parking there. And then from that point, 150 feet from the access on the around the corner, that'll be posted as no parking. I do understand, and I haven't been involved in any of the conversations, but I do understand that there are some conversations going on about parking in other places away from Knight Park. Like I said, I don't know enough to actually speak about it, but 20 years ago, this area was... it was used, but it wasn't as popular as it is now. We actually have a trailhead that starts basically just out of this picture that people come and they park to hike. We have an increase in non-motorized boat use, kayaks, canoes, surfboards, everything else. People are using the parking lot for that kind of use. And then you also have the seasonal fishermen. And so, and we're kind of between, I guess, the river and a bunch of private property. There's no place really to expand any further. The single car parking to the northeast, that property actually belongs to Fish and Wildlife. And we have permission to utilize it for parking. But it's not even county property. So questions?
Yeah, I've got several of them. I count the parking spots. I see 23 if there's no cars, and you can see how many cars there are, and that isn't even any boat ramp use. That's Knight Park and trailhead parking.
Mm-hmm.
So the boat ramp use, because usually a boat comes not only with the boat, they also have people or pastors with them, because there's several guides that work on that river. I see a situation, so if we get four more spots in the legal parking, that's 27 spots in a river that isn't uncommon to have 50 or 60 cars.
Right.
So I think we have to sit down with ODFW or something, so I know, are we going to be able to use that property up there and then give them signage to let them to move up to the other parking? Because if there's no signage, there's nothing on the main road coming back. I don't think there's a wide enough curve there.
No.
So we're limited to that one spot. Even if they have to walk a distance, it's better than nothing, because these people are coming and they don't know there's boat ramp or not. If there's very many people, they're not going to just turn around and leave.
Right. Well, my request for no parking does not do anything to solve any of our parking issues.
Can I maybe really interject here for a minute?
It's strictly a safety issue. And we've had these conversations. We've actually met with every agency involved in this parking lot, plus some. And everybody understands there's an issue, and everybody is trying to work forward to try to, I don't want to say solve the problem, because but to make it less of an impact.
Well, I think this is a safety issue, but do you move that safety issue to another safety issue unless you have it? Because they're not going home.
Right.
They've come traveled maybe 150, 200 miles to get there.
There's
no parking.
This is
the same thing we're going to face on Lindley Park.
Yeah, there are places along Three Rocks out towards 101 where a person could find a spot to pull into and get off the road. And yes, they will have to walk a ways. The convenience of this shoulder that I'm wanting to be posted is why it gets used. You know, it's right there. It's convenient, and it's available. And unfortunately, I need to make that unavailable to make it a little safer for the people who live beyond this point, because the road barely accommodates two-way traffic as it is now, and when you block a portion of that, it restricts it to basically a one-lane road on that corner. So
my comment is, don't just leave them hanging. Close it, but then leave them signage to tell them where to go. Because these people, a lot of them never even seen this river before.
Right.
And
understood.
They're from Portland. That's scary.
Commissioners, just on a kind of related note and more long term, you may recall we're actually working with a property owner, a couple of properties to the east on that road. It's actually Camp Westwind. And Camp Westwind brings in a lot of folks in certain times of the year that come across the river. They actually access the camp. It's on the other side of the Salmon River, you may recall. And we're working on a deal that hopefully, if it comes to fruition, would provide some additional parking a little bit to the east there. I don't know that it'll provide boat parking. That's probably not going to do that. But it may provide some of the car parking that takes up some of those spaces now and allow that, and also give some access to the trailhead, which is one of the areas that's being used there. So that's, if that comes to fruition, it's a couple of years off from now, so it's nothing that's going to be an immediate solution. We're still working on that.
You got to remember, these people are not from here. They don't know where it is. You got to give them direction signage.
Signage, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, we're in the process of actually trying to better sign even the trailhead, because it sounds to me like people get into the general area looking for the hiking trail, and they end up beyond Knight Park on down towards the end of the road, and it's a dead end road, it's not a through road, so they're wandering around down there trying to look for the trailhead. And so my parks supervisor has been working with the consortium up there to the people that actually maintain the trail to try to improve that, so people actually understand where they're supposed to be, and if maybe they know where the trailhead is, then they will park more towards Savage Road or on out towards 101, because that's kind of where the trailhead starts, is in that Savage Road intersection area.
Well, one of the differences between boat parking and that kind of parking, most of these boats are showing up, depending on the tide, mm-hmm. 2 o'clock at night in the dark,
mm-hmm.
so they don't see signs that are
understood
very well. They don't mean to be that way, but they just can't see much, and they're trying to get as close as they can.
It's dark.
Yeah, right. Right.
Where people that show to the trailhead, a little, they're going to be clear and be able to look around and see what's going on.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know how heavily this area that I'm going to be posting gets used for boat trailer parking, because like you said, I think the fishermen probably get first dibs on most of the spots because they're there much earlier. I think it's kind of an overflow of the single car parking that ends up there.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Do we have a consensus to move forward, have this come back?
I'm agreeable.
Okay. So we'll prepare an order then that we'll institute this. And do you have an effective date you want to do it?
Prior to the first fish that's caught on Salmon River.
First fish this season.
July this season.
June 15th.
End of June, 1st of July would be.
Let's give you time to put the signage up. That's the main thing I want to do.
So could I address one other issue? Roy, this isn't the only place. We're having problems in several of our parks because of our own success.
Mm-hmm.
We've built parks in good locations with decent facilities, and Moonshine and the proposed Lindley and several of our parks are reached in literally a congestion point for at least part of the year.
Yes.
I mean, I couldn't believe the things I saw at Moonshine, people waiting for 2 days just to get an opportunity to sign up.
Right. Yes.
And so, you know, I think it's a challenge that we need to address.
It is. The thing is, with all of our other parks and our day use with boat ramps and our overnight, it's for the most part, it's a singular use. The people that show up there are there to either fish or they're there to camp, and we don't get quite the numbers that we get in Knight Park, because Knight Park is a multiple use area. But you're right, when the fish are on the Aquinnah, Cannon Quarry Park overflows, and they overflow out onto Elk City Road. Now, fortunately, the shoulder along Elk City Road is wide enough that it can accommodate that. Same way with the boat ramp launch on South Bay Road. I've seen cars stacked up clear out to South Bay Road. But there again, there's room to accommodate that, and it's not a hazard. On the sleds, when the steelhead are running and everybody's drifting, I've seen people on both sides of the entrance into Moonshine Park. I've seen them parked along Sam's Creek Road where Twin Bridges ramp is, and all the way down. But it's a single use. We don't have as heavy a use, and plus for whatever reason, luck, I guess. Most, you know, they're alongside of a two-lane paved road that has ample shoulder space, and so it can accommodate this overflow issue. This is kind of the one stinker that we have.
So that begs the question, though, why not just widen the road? Make it a wider road and create shoulders, and then people can park there.
In this portion,
yes.
Here? There are right-of-way issues. This is only...
Explain that for people that may not.
This right-of-way here on Three Rocks Road is only 40 feet wide. And with the cut bank, the vertical cut bank on one side, and with basically a narrow shoulder and a drop-off on the other side, it would be an extremely expensive project to try to accommodate parking. We'd have to basically buy the right-of-way, additional right-of-way, slope easements. It just, you don't get any value out of it. It would be much easier to try to deal with either Fish and Wildlife or somebody else on some of the flatter ground to make accommodations for more.
No, I understand. I just thought it was important.
And the other thing is it's different funds. You have Parks General Fund that supports the parks, and you have a dedicated road fund that supports the roads, and the two don't mix.
So you said it would be very expensive. Ballpark, how expensive is very expensive?
In order to widen the road in that section that I would be marking no parking to accommodate shoulder parking, I would say you're probably looking at about a $1.5 million project.
A lot of money. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions from commissioners? All right.
I'll prepare an order for your adoption.
Bring it back to us. All right. Thank you, Director King.
Sure.
Next item is reports. And as I indicated, Amy Chapman is here. And Amy, you have some information on biosolids, which I know is of interest to several people in the audience. I've also asked Director Husing of the Planning Department to offer some comments on the Planning Department role in the biosolids. And with that, Amy, go ahead with your presentation, and then Anna, we'll hear from you. We'll have some discussion.
Good morning, commissioners, county council. Amy Chapman, Lincoln County Environmental Health Manager. So what
I want to explain exactly what that means.
Many things. And one of the things it means is that I'm here to provide background information about the issue of biosolids and land application. Because the county isn't directly involved in the process of permitting land application of biosolids, I'm here to provide background information so that we can better understand the issue. The issue of biosolids and land application is primarily between the entities that operate wastewater treatment plants and the DEQ. The wastewater treatment plants produce the biosolids, and the DEQ regulates how they are applied to the land. So let's start.
And the county has no wastewater treatment plants.
I beg your pardon?
And the county has no wastewater.
The county doesn't operate any wastewater treatment plants. It's primarily the cities.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with just basically what is a biosolid? What are biosolids? And I'm just going to read the definition here that was provided by the DEQ. Biosolids are a nutrient-rich byproduct of sewage treatment. The U.S. EPA and the Environmental Protection Agency and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality promote the use of biosolids as a natural fertilizer and sustainable alternative to commonly used chemical fertilizers. Biosolids are also used to improve soil structure, which improves growing conditions. Prior to application, disease-causing organisms and potentially toxic metals present in biosolids must be removed or reduced to safe levels. So, what's the beneficial reuse? With proper management, biosolid land application is protective of public health and the environment, and it provides a resource value for crop production. So, how is it regulated? Permitting reuse programs and monitoring records, maintenance, and reporting. So, biosolids are regulated by the state of Oregon under the Oregon Administrative Rules 340 Division 50 for land application of biosolids, and then the federal government, the EPA 40 CFR 503, standards for use or disposal of sewage sludge. So going to the Oregon Administrative Rule and looking at it in a little more detail, the DEQ puts out this information. The Environmental Quality Commission encourages land application of biosolids and domestic septage, which are managed in a manner which protects public health and maintains or improves environmental quality. These beneficial recyclable materials enhance soil resource and promote plant growth.
And just for the record, that's actually quoting the administrative rule, correct? Or paraphrasing?
I'm quoting, that's not a quote. I don't know whether that's actually in the rule or not.
But then this is part of a presentation from DEQ, right?
This is part of a DEQ presentation.
Okay. All right.
So I thought it was interesting that Oregon biosolids were, all the blue area of that circle are land application of biosolids in the state of Oregon. So most of the biosolids in Oregon are land applied. The DEQ permitting reuse programs, the NPDES, which is National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or Water Pollution Control Facility, the WPCF permits, is how the DEQ regulates biosolids. So what's part of the permit? Part of the permit is the management plan, site authorization, monitoring, and reporting. And I'm not going to go into this in any great detail. I just want to broad brush, give you the idea that what the regulation covers. So the part of the regulation or the permit is a biosolid management plan. The management plans are legally part of the permit. The contents are the facility wastewater source information, distribution and treatment information, maintenance, monitoring, and reporting, contingency land application plan. And the plans must be approved by the DEQ, and they must go through public notice. Land application is a required part of the management plan. The land application sites and descriptions, characterization of the soils, topography, hydrogeology, climates, the crops or vegetation, nutrient rates, consumptive water rates, irrigation, site monitoring. So there's a lot of things that they consider in site application. And as it was described to me, by Paul Kennedy, who is our representative of the DEQ. When this biosolids are distributed to a field, it's in a dry time of year, and the soil is dry. So any liquid is taken up in the first layer there of the field and completely contained. And so it's not likely to be running off or leaching very far at that time of year. This is the actual site authorization documentation checklist for the land application of biosolids. And you can see at the bottom there, biosolids and land application information. So looking at that, the site authorization, the DEQ approves the land application sites prior to use. typically involves a site visit by the DEQ. I requested to accompany Paul Kennedy later on this month or next month, going out to a site visit where the owner of the land requested having biosolids applied to his field. So biosolids, the sites are authorized, and they go through a separate process to be authorized. New sites go through a public notification process, and the site authorization checklist is available to everybody. All of this is public information and readily available to anybody who wants it. And the site selection, they consider all those things, the topography, soils, crops, climate, hydrogeology, adjacent land use, is it compatible, incompatible, water sources, drinking water sources. The site restrictions protect public health and environment at a land application site. Setbacks from sensitive features such as wells, water features, roads, property boundaries. You access restrictions. So if you have Class B biosolids, you don't go on the field for 30 days and you don't use it publicly for a year. And special conditions like wind farms, easements. Biosolids, the nitrogen is a primary limiting constituent, and that's you get crop nutrient requirements from OSU fertilizer. So they're using the OSU fertilizer guide to judge whether they're getting too much nitrogen on the property, and the calculation for that. Compliance monitoring, they're under a management plan. Biosolids, the pollutants are metals, nitrogen, nutrients, pathogen reduction, vector attraction reduction. Those are the things that they consider in regulating the biosolids. And a lot of the monitoring is based on how much is applied. So if you have less than 320 dry tons, it's once per year and so on. The monitoring regulated pollutants are arsenic, cadmium, copper, lead, mercury, molybdenum, nickel, selenium, and zinc. And then they have, maximum contaminant levels and so on. They also monitor nutrients, nitrogen, total Kaldol nitrogen, ammonium, phosphorus, potassium, pH, total solids, volatile solids. They also monitor pathogens, pathogen reduction. Organism that transmits a pathogen, they monitor vectors.
So, Katie, you keep saying they.
This is the DEQ. Yeah.
It's the DEQ.
Yeah, these regulations are through the DEQ.
How often do they monitor?
Well, they monitor according to how much is distributed onto the property. There's a lot of monitoring that goes on, and it's complicated. If you want to know the details of that, I would suggest that we ask Paul Kennedy come here from the DEQ and answer any specific details of that. But there's a lot of monitoring that goes on.
Nice to know the specifics on for Lincoln County. I don't care about the rest of the state, but what's going on here?
I think we should get Mr. Kennedy here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So there's soils monitoring, performance monitoring of residual soil nitrate. Nitrate is the primary thing that they're worried about in a biosolid application. In Western Oregon, soil sampling and testing should occur in the fall after the crop harvest and prior to the winter rainfall, and then adjust how much biosolids are applied. Soil monitoring is the initial soil sample, periodic soil sampling, soil moisture harvest information. Maintenance, there's a facility review, biosolids, check application rates, maintain and clean equipment in the field, and look at the crops. Records are helpful. Records are helpful for troubleshooting facility operational problems. New operators and managers will have an easier time being trained about biosolid operations. good records address questions and increase community acceptance of your program. Records can improve defense and against accusations of improper land application activities. Information can be used to compile annual report. So here's an example of the records. They do operation and process records. Monitoring, there's the monitoring. Sampling, laboratory, land application. Details of Schedule B permit, or monthly, I think that's reporting, pretreatment reports, land application, so on. So there's all these reports that go in. And then the annual report is the quantity of the product applied, the quality of the product applied. Like biosolids, they're looking at pollutants, nutrients, pathogen rejection, and harvest information, and soil testing and certified. So that's just...
So this may be a question for Mr. Kennedy, but the annual report, I assume, is a compilation for the entire state. Does it break it down by region?
I would presume that it does, and the answer is I don't know. Yeah, that would be a question for
Paul
Kennedy.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Okay, so this then is from... the DEQ, and they responded to Lincoln County. Lincoln County complaint residents, I presume, somebody complained about biosolids in the Logsdon area. So this is the response of the DEQ to that. Federal and state regulations have been in place since 1994 to ensure the application of biosolids on agricultural lands is safe to humans and the environment. DEQ permits the Anadarko Crest in the cities of Lincoln City, Toledo, Celeste, and Depot Bay to apply biosolids in the Logsdon area. And I understand that Lincoln City is no longer applying biosolids. They have been in compliance with their DEQ permit requirements for biosolid applications. DEQ requires permittees to take the following measures to safely use biosolids on farms. So here's what they're looking at, processing of biosolids. So to ensure that biosolids are processed correctly, cities test their biosolids annually for E. coli, nutrients, and metals, and report these results to the DEQ annually, along with information about their biosolids application. So that gets to your question, Terry, as to how often they monitor a little bit. Metals that are routinely tested include arsenic, cadmium, copper, mercury, nickel, molybdenum, lead, selenium, and zinc. DEQ does not require cities or farmers to take samples of the Celeste River. If cities comply with their DEQ permit requirements, runoff of biosolids to the river should not occur. Then the processing of biosolids. DEQ also requires applications to be at least 200 feet from drinking water wells and establishes setbacks for surface waters, residences, and property lines on a specific site basis. Grazing animals must be kept off the application sites for at least 30 days and milk-producing animals for 90 days. But there is no requirement to keep wild animals off the site because that would be impractical. DEQ is also not aware of any problems that occur in elk or other wild animals exposed to biosolids. So the DEQ investigated. By the way, I'll take any questions if you have any.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Everything through the chair.
First of all, let's conclude the presentation.
Oh, okay.
The Board of Commissioners has some questions and comments, and we'll be happy to take constituent input and answer any questions at that time.
Okay, so to finish then, DEQ investigated two biosolid application sites, Mann and Weiscarver, near the Celeste River in response to concerns from neighbors in 2014 and 15, and determined applications to be in compliance with DEQ regulation. Lincoln City did, however, stop land applications at their Weiscarver sites in 2015 to prevent overloading of nitrogen as a precautionary measure. The city was conservatively applying biosolids to these sites at about 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre, half the allowable rate of 100 pounds per acre. But the city's soil testing indicated that nitrogen levels were about 90 pounds per acre. So the city decided that soil nitrogen levels were high enough to warrant waiting until nitrogen levels were lower. So they stopped applying. The city also proactively takes soil samples now at a greater frequency than required by the DEQ permit to address neighbor concerns and provide additional assurance that they are not over-applying nutrients to the soil that will run off into surface waters and groundwater. So the DEQ reviewed the well logs from the Oregon Water Resources Department for the area and limited well data from real estate transaction database. We do not believe groundwater is affected by biosolid applications. Most of the wells draw from an aquifer that is in bedrock and under confined conditions. Confined conditions means that surface water will not be getting into the well, which means the aquifer is largely protected from any potential surface water contamination, provided that the wells are properly constructed. There is one well close to the river that is likely influenced by the river, but there were no shallow wells documented in the database. In all cases, if wells are properly constructed, risk contamination for properly applied biosolids is very low. So DEQ is aware of water quality concerns and documented impairments on the Oregon's Clean Water Act Section 303D list in the Siletz River and is evaluating potential sources of these impairments. We will consider whether biosolids may contribute to water quality issues. DEQ assembled a local stakeholder advisory committee in 2012 to provide advice to the DEQ in developing strategies for water quality improvements as part of the Mid-Coast Basin Total Maximum Daily Loads. And there's a website that you can go to for more information. So that's just a broad stroke background information about the issue. There's all kinds of sources for further information. If anyone should have an environmental pollution concern or believe violations are occurring regarding the application of biosolids, DEQ has a complaint hotline, and there it is, and there's the number to call. David Belia gave me this information about the complaints at the local level in the Loxon area, and Paul Kennedy also provided information about this in this PowerPoint, and both of them are readily available to anyone who has questions. So that concludes my background information.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Commissioners, questions, comments?
Could I ask that we get this posted as part of the meeting packet online so folks can easily access it?
We'll see if that's done. Any questions of Amy, and then I'm going to ask Director Husing for...
So I guess, Amy, it's the way you describe it, it sounds like there's lots of testing. I think we need to talk to Mr. Kennedy, but one of the things I'm concerned about is I've said on all these water issue things that were involved at the city level, and the more I've learned that you're probably right about the wells, but so much of our water flows surfacely off the ground fast here. That's one of the reasons we don't have the big aquifers and a lot of the rest of the state does. So if it's rainy, slope, conditions change, can they monitor and change things quick enough to stop it? Because 50 feet, I mean, that's only about the distance from a little bit longer than this room. That's not very far. If it's not going to penetrate, it's going to travel on the surface. At least, I mean, 50 feet is not very far. And if there's any slope at all to the bank, it'll get to the river, it looks like to me, at least under poor conditions where you have rain that was unexpected in June, maybe they started in May. So I'm concerned about those kinds of things. unusual situation, but it still gets to the river.
I had a really fascinating conversation with Paul Kennedy, understanding soils and water, and how soil and water, soil is absorbs water. And I suggest that you ask that question of Paul Kennedy. He gives a really knowledgeable answer to the theory of that. And by the time that the general gist of it is that the biosolids are applied in August when it's dry. The land is dry.
I think there might be a problem there because the room's full of people that are seeing trucks go by now.
Today,
okay. Then that is definitely a question.
Everyone will have an opportunity to comment and question. Please allow Amy to conclude her presentation. We understand there's some people in the audience that feel differently, and we'll recognize those people. Thank you.
Yeah, so there it is. So that's what we want to know from at our to the that's a question to the DEQ.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, if you're telling me that the theory is, hey, you apply these solids in August when the land is dry, and we see them applying solids when it's raining, then I think that's a question for Paul Kennedy.
And let me
proceed my question a little bit, because so if it's permeable, I mean, so that it absorbs, the problem lies, it's just like a sponge. A sponge is a great absorbent of water, but a wet sponge doesn't absorb anything. So that's my logic with soils. I think that the theory is good, but the unusual situation where there is a rain, then you apply it. We've got to have a further discussion with the state there on this. It's not going to be solved here by Amy.
This is not August.
It's not raining at the moment, but that could change.
This business of leaching and all of that is a specific question that Paul Kennedy should address, or somebody from the DEQ, yeah. Dave Bellevue.
We may want to get both of them here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what I was going to add, the comment, though, is it's not the DEQ that's applying these biosolids. It's the cities that are applying the biosolids with a permit and regulation process through DEQ. So, again, it's not the county. It's the cities in a contract, really, with a landowner that's regulated by DEQ.
That's what I understand. The entity that's really responsible is the city, is the entity
city.
That is providing
in
the biosolids.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Any other questions or comments at this point of Amy from the commissioner?
No. Appreciate the presentation.
Yeah, just a quick one. Who watches the cities? Who's responsible?
You know, if I open the... please hold your comment. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm trying to do this in an organized process so that everybody has an opportunity. Okay?
I apologize.
Okay. And again, I understand there are people that disagree. I think we all agree that they're applying it in May, and it's not August. We can all figure that out. So, again, we'll give everyone an opportunity, but I ask that we do this in an orderly process. Okay? Thank you. Any other commissioner? I'm sorry.
No, I'm okay.
Ano, go ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Ano Husing, director of the planning department. I will be brief, Commissioner Thompson. Famous last words, right? When this issue was brought to the county's attention, I was asked to try to figure out what's going on. There was a suggestion that there was actually a land use compatibility statement role in this, that I was perplexed when I heard that, because I turned around and said to our staff, I said, in the 6 years that I've been planning director, I don't ever remember signing off on a land use compatibility statement here, and we sign off on a bunch of land use compatibility statements on a regular basis. If someone's applying for a state permit, very often, if there's a land use side to it, the state wants to know that what people are proposing to do that needs a state permit is cinched up and is compatible with the land use program. So it's one of the reasons I was asked to try to figure out what was going on when these concerns were raised. And so, and when I fielded a phone call from one of our friends in the audience about this, my initial response was, we hear you, but the county needs to, and with anything, right? The county, if it's asked to act, needs to go through at least a brief, vigorous period of fact-finding to sort of understand, all right, what are the issues? Who regulates what? Is there a county role? Who are the players, and how does this program operate? So I had heard that this activity, I've heard about this activity years ago, and other, it's happening around the country. And so I've actually, it's been fascinating, along with Amy and others, to learn about this, because the county doesn't have a role. And what I quickly learned when I was looking at the DEQ documents, and a lot of the stuff is there for anyone who wants to, these days you could pick it up. It was really clear that the county has no role in it. They may send a courtesy notice to Amy that something's going on, but there isn't a land use compatibility statement. This is really between DEQ and the people that are creating the sludge or the biosolids. And at the back end of the process, there's obviously this DEQ oversight of how they apply this stuff on the land. So what I think is central to this is that, and I'm hearing it from you, is that we're still in fact-finding. We're still trying to get our bearings about who the different players are. And I feel some legitimate concerns are there. And I've talked with people from the Siletz Valley already, and I think there's, among the landowners, there's some substantially different perspectives. I know one particular landowner, because I don't know whether they want it reported out in public, they said, I wouldn't want that stuff on my property. Others welcome it on their property. There's another class of folks that are saying, didn't realize there's stuff in there besides the human waste and that might have so-called beneficial uses, but there are these other trace elements in there. And one other group of category of people that I've already spoke with said, I'd like to learn more about that. And maybe if you buy grass-fed beef from a property, as our friends in the audience have suggested, you might want to, if you feel strongly about that there might be bio uptake of various things that gets fed to the livestock that then you consume, that from a consumer's perspective, you may want to know that before you buy grass-fed beef. You may ask that question of that landowner: do you use biosolids? I think those are all appropriate responses. So I think what's really important as we continue to work with the community on this, we're learning we have very little control over this, that the legislature actually took, we are not part of it. There is no land use compatibilities between these other entities. Having said that, and trying to be responsive to the legitimate concerns that have been raised by people in the community, is the county does have an opportunity, though, and that's what we're doing right now, is to understand the facts, get our colleagues in here, promote a dialogue within the community about what's really going on out there, get that education out there. And I'm preaching to the choir when I say this to the three of you commissioners who are so effective at interacting with the state government and members of Congress, is if the county doesn't actually have a regulatory role in this, but we're at least providing your good offices, working with staff to promote a community dialogue about that. And if we determine, just because an activity's been happening for decades doesn't mean it's right, or doesn't mean it needs to somehow, we shouldn't ask hard questions about what's going on. So in the spirit of fact-finding, working with the community, providing more knowledge about what's going on out there, and making sure that DEQ has the proper oversight, I know in a number of times you've made land use decisions based on not being certain that the state of Oregon's going to have the horses in play that can go out there and provide the oversight that's necessary. So we've been to that rodeo before, that at times maybe this oversight isn't as strict as it should be. And that's why I think it's going to be so instructive for us to go out and see what's going out on the ground, constructively engage our friends at DEQ, and the other players, of course, are the people that produce the biosolids, and have that kind of community dialogue. And I think it's been a very constructive process thus far, to the extent that our friends in the community want you to have the authority somehow to shut things down overnight or wage lawsuits. If we're going to engage the state of Oregon or the feds on this, one of the reasons Lincoln County has been a leader among many, many rural counties in being effective at doing that is we have a reputation for doing our homework. We do not go off half-cocked and immediately rush into things. Because once you start to do that, if you don't get your fact-finding in order, if you don't really understand the players, if you don't allow the agencies that are part of it now to explain themselves and work with them, then you get a bad reputation for, oh, there goes Lincoln County again, running off without really knowing what they're talking about. So I think this is a very constructive process. I thank our friends in the audience to bring our attention. I'm learning a lot. I've got a lot of questions I want answered on this. And I think at the end of this, the community is going to understand a lot more what's going on. We're really going to get a handle on how and where this is being done in our community. And to the extent that Commissioner Hall, I think you've already talked to Representative Gomberg several times. We've included members of the state legislature that represent us in this dialogue. I think this is going to lead to a really better understanding of what's going on. And if we can identify some deficiencies in the process, or call to question in this day and age, is this practice, are there alternatives to it? I think that's going to be a positive outcome. And so, again, I look forward to hearing some more from our friends in the audience and other people in the community as we all wrap our minds around this thing and come up with a set of very responsible responses and understandings to what's going on. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will respond to any questions, but I think this is great. I think we're doing the right thing here, and thank you for asking us to make sure that we run this down. And
you and I all have worked on water, different issues for going on 20 years, and this is without their coming forward, I wouldn't be engaged in this. For some reason, it's kind of slipped through the cracks. Do you feel that way too yourself?
Well, when I started reading the DEQ materials, I saw in the early 2000s there was a piece of legislation that definitely declared this is a legitimate farm use and therefore we don't have a role in it. And I recall when you were in the legislature, you know, you were a critical player in making the whole watershed, the Oregon plan with salmon and watershed. So we're really in a different environment now in terms of I don't know if things have fallen through the cracks. I sense certain programs, when they've been happening for decades, they have a momentum to them, and maybe the hard questions after a while aren't asked. I mean, our ability to understand, you know, bio uptake, you know, there's some additional scientific things going on, but I'm not sure things have fallen through the cracks. But I think we need to keep asking ourselves, What are we doing, how we're doing it, and making sure.
Let me
sure.
ask you another question.
Yes.
We both were involved with creation of watershed councils. And have you knowledge of the watershed councils being active in this? Because there is the entity that should be at least examining this type of issue, a local level, if that's going on inside of a watershed.
Yeah.
And I don't know of anything where I've been directly involved. Do you know of anything?
No, I don't. And that's really a question for the Midcoast Watershed Council folks. And I'll tell you, you know, Amy showed up the DEQ slide here. When I first came on board with the county, I participated in that DEQ TMDL process. I went to those many meetings. This issue was never raised in that setting. And so, again, I think our friends in the audience and the other folks that have raised this issue have done us a service. And I'm proud that the county is responding in a measurable way to sort of run this thing down, understand what's going on, and ask the hard questions. Because the state doesn't always get it right. And if you've been involved with things long enough, you know that's the case. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful or inflammatory here. It's just, I'm just trying to make sure that people do understand that if we're looking into it, it's not that we lack confidence in the Department of Environmental Quality. It's a small agency that's tasked to do so many things, and their ability to really adjust and have the adequate budgets to do things, I think that's the line of inquiry that with our colleagues in the audience here that we need to run down. So I don't know if it slipped through the cracks, but I think this is a really outstanding dialogue, and I think we're just at the beginning of this dialogue.
Yes or no, but it worked for me.
It's not in my nature. It's yes, it slipped through the cracks. That's actually more than just yes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Commissioner.
I was wondering if I could ask, offer an observation and ask a question to
sure.
Mr. Belmont.
I have some comments, but go ahead.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's interesting that Mr. Husing mentioned grass-fed beef, and in my research on this subject, I came across another state, I'm not sure which one, where there was a proposal, which did not pass, but it was introduced in the state legislature to require that crops grown or meat raised on lands where biosolids had been applied, that they would have to be labeled as such, which is an interesting thought to give consumers that awareness. The question I had for Mr. Belmont, I believe at last week's discussion, we asked him to do some further research into the question, even though this is a state program, is there anything in the statutes that might give us the opportunity to either prohibit or add an extra layer of regulation beyond what the state does?
And I've just done a preliminary look at that to see what's going on. The one thing that stood out immediately to me was the fact that in the early 2000s, they added the application of biosolids to the Right to Farm Act. That basically is a state attempt to preempt local government regulation of any of that activity. So just off the face of it, I would say that no, you cannot prohibit it. A county couldn't go in and prohibit the application of biosolids. The state has said this is a statewide concern. We're going to do statewide regulation of this, and at least in terms of the application. What is a little bit more interesting is that unlike other parts of the state law that have very clear preemptive language, the language around DEQ's authority in biosolids itself doesn't have that kind of preemptory language. So there's a secondary question. So while you may not be able to prohibit the application, there's a secondary question of whether or not you could enact maybe some different or more stringent. You couldn't, I can tell you this, you could not act any less stringent regulations. You couldn't say you can apply it, you know, without doing the testing or anything like that. You could not go there. But there might be room, I don't know, at this point, and again, it's very preliminary, to possibly take some of the regulations and have more stringent regulations.
Such so as greater setback, or maybe setback a more or limited more application season, or
right.
Potentially.
That is, at least, it's. I'm not ruling that out at this point. I haven't yet seen that. I have to do more research on that particular issue to see whether or not we could do something like that. I did do some checking, you know, and some folks had raised the question of some litigation and challenges that local communities have made in a couple of other areas, and I've learned two things. I reviewed the Washington case in there, and that case got thrown out. The county's attempt to regulate got thrown out by the courts. They said they couldn't do it. So that's not good.
Because of these preemption
yeah,
things.
Yeah. The state regulates in Washington. Yeah. There's also an attempt. I have not been able to track down the specific case. I'm still looking for it. But there was an attempt by a California county, as I understand it, too, to do some of these things. And the California courts threw it out, too. So I want, you know, that cautionary note there that it is that you know, if you attempt to do these kinds of regulations, the state's not going to look very favorably on it. I did talk to the folks at the state to say, are you aware of any other locality in Oregon that's attempted to regulate biosolid application? And they said no, as far as the county. No county has done that, attempted to do it, that they said. I'm still going to do my own independent research on that issue. What they have said, and I think we've heard some of this today, and where, again, I think the discussion here is that a number of the actual producers of the waste, some of the cities, some of the special districts that do this, have taken a real close look at what they're doing. I think every community in Lincoln County that does this has a land application approval. They're not all land applying. We heard about Lincoln City pulling back because of concerns with nitrogen. I think that actually the city of Newport's going the opposite way. They've been land applying for years around the municipal airport out here. They're now seeking, and they have what's called Class A biosolids. I'm not a scientist, so I don't know what that means. All I understand is it's treated more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But they're actually going to be seeking a land application outside in the community someplace out here. And frankly, I think when they look at that, everybody looks at kind of the Sluts area as the area, the general area out there is the area to go. But the city of Newport's possibly going to be exploring a new land application site. Yaha's currently landfills it, but they have an approved site. So some of the cities have been talking about alternative methods to deal with biosolids, and they're really the source of making. They do have the local control. They can determine where to go and what to do with the biosolids. So they're also part of this conversation as we've been talking about.
Any other questions?
I think what Mr. Chair, what what Wayne was just saying, though, just reinforces the point of how important it is for us to take our time, be professional, understand what's going on, engage the agency, come up with a set of observations grounded in actual facts, because we don't, this frontal assault on the system, and I understand it, if you feel like you're being poisoned, then, oh my God, stop it right now. And I respect that, if that's the emotion that's driving it. But it's an unsatisfactory response, because you'll end up getting thrown out in court. And again, I'm always impressed with this county and the leadership that we've had. We have a great reputation in state government. When Lincoln County comes to state government with an issue, the feeling is they're going to take us seriously. Because, you know, we got a former legislator sitting up there, and Commissioner Hall, you've worked extensively with the Association of Oregon Counties. That's how you make progress. When you don't have the actual authority and you want to engage in a policy discussion that says, you know what, either we need additional authority or we need the DEQ to amend their rules, find out what's going on. That's the secret sauce to how to for us to go forward. I think it's just so much more productive than litigation. And I think we've got to understand that if you're a municipality and suddenly overnight you're saying, you know, even the politics may turn within a community that the constituents within that city say, I don't care what the DEQ says. I don't like that idea that we're doing that. Let's incinerate them or bring them to they've got to have time to adjust. To say, all right, we were planning to do this, but we're going to make, maybe we'll be doing something different. There's so many different ways, constructive ways to approach this issue.
So, Arno, I think you're 100% right. If we find that there is a problem, or even if we don't, we want to change it. One of the things that we have done in this county is to come in not with just the problem, but with the solution. And that's the trick, is we've got to try to understand the problem enough that when we walk in to make a change, we've got a solution that is doable. And with our experience on the board and Wayne's experience and yours and Amy's, if there is a problem, I think we can find the solution. But we need more time to understand this. I agree with you 100%. Let's not just say, oh, we just stop. We have to figure the solution. How to?
And I think it's yeah. I think it's so important for the community that they understand that the three of you as commissioners, this concern was brought to you. You just didn't shrug your shoulders and say it's a DEQ problem. Get out of here. That was not the response. I immediately my phone started ringing. We started looking into this. We've been engaging these folks. We've had phone conversations, other conversations. I'm really looking forward to seeing what we learn in this whole process. I think it's going to be a valuable outcome, one way or another.
So I have a couple observations, and certainly when the issue first came to my attention, the feeling was, you're a county commissioner, why don't you know about it? Well, I think there's some evidence that right or wrong, we weren't a part of it, because the way the laws are structured, we're not required to be a part of it. But certainly once...
You're prohibited from being a part of it.
Thank you. Prohibited. So, and again, yeah, it would have been nice, and there may have been a courtesy, or could have been a courtesy effort, but for whatever reason, that didn't happen. But I think once that all three of us have become aware of it, again, we want to understand the issue. We want to make sure that the actions that we take are going to be effective. We don't want to take actions that just delay a situation and, again, continue to have people potentially exposed to poisons or other risks. And the other thought is, as well, we don't have the ability, because of the way the laws are currently written, to necessarily directly intervene. I think the cities, and council, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the cities, if they decided they wanted to stop the spreading of those materials, they certainly have the ability to say, we're no longer going to do it. So while we don't have the ability to intervene directly and maybe stop this as quickly as we'd like, the cities may have that opportunity. And I'm not trying to throw the cities under the bus, but I'm saying they're the ones that have the contract with landowners. That's, to me, where there is potentially an opportunity to change it. Go ahead.
I just want to add one other piece of information.
Sure.
The EPA is in charge of testing biosolids for contaminants, and they do that on a regular basis and put out a report and determine what contaminants are a threat to public health, and then they affect testing for that contaminant.
So I think at this point, and I'll speak for myself, I'm starting to understand that there are laws in place. There are laws that require monitoring. There are laws that require testing. There are laws that prohibit things. But to me, the real question is, what's the monitoring? How often is it done? What are the results of the monitoring? How come we don't know what those results are? And how frequently are they being done? I think the issue about water runoff is also critical. It's one thing to say you only apply it in August, but I think we've got some evidence that says that doesn't seem to be the case. And again, they being the cities, apply that in August. So the last thing I'd like to say is that I've been working directly with Representative Gomberg. I was on a forest farm tour yesterday. The subject of biosolids came up, talking with some of the farms in the East County. And I also was able to communicate with, again, Representative Gomberg, who has asked some questions of DEQ. And I want to read part of an email from David Bellier that at least says there is a process. We understand there's a process. We have some questions about what's actually being done to monitor it. But again, quoting David Bellier, says, each permittee that is applying biosolids in a logged-in area has a valid National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit. You heard that referenced in a prior slide. An approved biosolids management plan. Additionally, each location for biosolids application was reviewed, went through a public comment process, and approved by DEQ prior to placement of biosolids. The permits, plans, documentation are public records and are available from DEQ at the Oregon DEQ requesting public records form. So again, there is a process in place. We haven't been a part of it, and I think we need to understand better, what's really being done that assures us that the plan in place is being complied with and doesn't need to be changed. And we'll continue to work on that effort.
That's a question, just I'm not sure. My assumption would be, if anybody knows the answer to this, but my assumption would be that the cities have chosen this route versus, you know, there's no large incineration plants in the area, and probably this is a cheaper disposal method for them than trucking them to landfills. That would be my assumption.
I assume so.
Yeah, it's a cost.
So one question I do have. One of the slides references some concerns that were raised in 2014 and 2015. Did we get any reports back from those? Obviously we can do the research and will do the research, but do we have any knowledge of those investigations?
I'm sure they're readily available through DEQ.
They haven't been necessarily provided to us. So again, we need more information.
And I think that's why our fellow citizens in the audience and other folks that care about this have done us a service.
Yeah.
That this has been sort of quietly happening, and greater transparency and involvement and running this down that just shows we that this is going to be an important process, and I look forward to. We're going to go out on the site with Mr. Kennedy. We're going to get boots on the ground, go out there and look at this, and we were talking about it yesterday. Maybe we would have some kind of forum with property owners as well, get this information out there, and
I think we need to involve the cities too.
And yeah, they're, you know, and I appreciate you saying you didn't want to throw them under the bus. That's why I hazarded the comments about asking them to stop what they're doing overnight and do something differently without, you know, some advance warning, that they need to be major players in this, in terms of what we're going to share, what we learn with them. We want, of course, we would want their involvement, but you know, it's a question for ratepayers too. You know, they've got to, if they're going to do something different, then how does that work? And they need some lead time, because they have these biosolids. If they're anticipating having some applications this summer, and if they haven't thought in terms of, all right, do I now truck this to a landfill? What are those costs, or provide some incineration? That, you know, there's contingency planning that they're going to need to do, because it may be as this information is shared within the community, again, that the a big constituency would be people within the community that you know, within the city, that says, you know what, I think in this day and age, we should, given the fact that there are other contaminants, and it may be at low levels, but really trying to understand how how much of all these metals, when they start accumulating, how they find their way through things, that's a sophisticated process, and our ability to understand these things and measure these things improves every year. So that's why I'm anxious to see, you know, there may be a point where we just say, we take a precautionary approach and say, look, we don't really thoroughly understand how much of what's really in that waste stream. Soil is, and Commissioner Thompson, you remember this from the Watershed Council stuff, what we learned with trying to understand how big buffers should be just for regular agricultural practices to protect water quality. It is true, and I've received and been involved with a lot of this in the past, soil and vegetation is very, very effective at retaining and pulling up contaminants. And in fact, there was so much back and forth during the early days of the Oregon plan. How big does a buffer need to be? And I recall hearing from some respected people that Oregon State University was tasked to go in the ground and actually do some scientific studies to try to answer those questions. Does a buffer need to be 100 feet? Does it need to be 50 feet? And again, just for normal agricultural practices, not for this. And they were finding when they put the scientific instruments in the ground and measured this, they were astonished at how effective soil and vegetation is at retaining and cleansing and doing these processes. Having said that, that doesn't mean we should just, that's why we're doing this fact finding, yep, is to get a better handle on this.
So let me make one last comment here. That's one of the reasons that Lincoln County does not let go of its wetlands. When we get a piece of property that comes to us, it's almost policy that if we get a marsh that comes to Lincoln County and we get possession of it, we don't sell it off, we don't lease it, because right, what we've learned over the years since the Watershed Councils and all this work was done, that this is really valuable land for not only the wildlife, which most people look at, but was a cleaning tool for our environment. I'm looking at Wayne just.
Well, it's beyond that. We actually have a program, our Land Legacy Program, in which we've actually worked to enhance those wetlands and actually preserve some of the upland areas around it too. So
I'll make sure I check in with our colleagues at the Watershed Council. If they haven't followed this conversation, we'll make sure that they're involved. I plan to go to their dinner on May 30th, but I'll be talking to them, and okay, Let's involve them as well.
Okay. Well, and I'll be following up with Representative Gomberg, and I know we'll get the DEQ here. Any other? I'm going to delay commissioner reports to allow constituent input, since I assume that most of the constituent input is relative to this issue. So with that, who would like to go first? And we'll keep Director Husing and Ms. Chapman here.
We'll stick around.
Okay. So you can answer questions. And for the record, please identify yourselves and welcome. Thank you for your patience.
My name is Margaret Patterson. I live at 6029 Logston Road. I'm right on the river.
Okay.
I have pictures, if I may address this to you.
Sure. Pictures are good evidence. I'm a visual guy. I like pictures.
These are the five sides.
Okay.
This is my home.
Okay.
On the other side, well, actually, this shows the river.
Mm-hmm.
The river actually is right alongside all those five sites.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it
okay,
May 7th, it rained that entire week.
All right.
His field was right on the river.
Okay. May I keep that, I assume?
I can make a copy.
Make a copy. Yes. I don't want to make a copy. This is a letter I got from Paul Kennedy explaining.
We'll just give it to her and she'll make sure
we have all. Well, okay, let her finish and then we'll.
This is what he says is creating the algae on my riverfront.
Okay.
And I have pictures of that as well. He says this little black line is seeping into the river.
Okay.
Created by what you were just explaining about the swamps. I have a swamp in the background behind my field. It's been there. I've lived there 52 years. It has never grown algae before. I also have water samples that I turned in 2010 on my well. There was no E. coli at that time. In 2010, it was found in E. coli. I have a very shallow well.
As do I.
Yeah, it goes down to bedrock, and that's the table of the water runs off into the river.
All right. I'll ask our recorder to take copies of this. We'll give this back to you.
Okay.
We'll keep that information to ask questions of. Paul Kennedy was actually the respondent on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
Would you like to see the analytical reports of my waters?
If you'd like to share them with us, we'll certainly keep
them. I also want to show you some pictures of what my riverfront looks like now, which I can't use anymore.
How much money did you spend on your water purification system?
About $3,000 to get it started, and now we have to keep it up.
Again, may we take copies of that for our record so we can share that concern with DEQ?
This is my water report in 2002.
Okay.
Ecoli was absent.
Mm-hmm.
This is my report in 2010, present.
Okay. All right.
And then we had all this system put through. They said it was absent after we put a.
After you put the systems in place.
Systems in place. It's like a science lab in my house.
I'm chuckling, not because of your problem. I've had to deal with the same thing.
Okay, you were saying also that you know the rivers were having this problem. This is a printout of the Chetco River. They are unhappy in Chetco.
Okay.
Two. This is, we were talking about the incline of the riverbanks. This is a field that has an incline towards the river. And it's almost a misnomer to say that it's a solid. It is not a solid.
Yeah, it's a liquid.
It is a liquid, but I'm not mad.
Okay.
So this is how my riverbank looks like now. Before, this is my grandson, my great-grandson, playing in the same place before, now. We cannot use our riverfront.
It's pretty, anything you're willing to share is.
It's pretty powerful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm a visual guy. That's
I've
very
got
powerful.
Copies of
Commissioners, if you want to give me that, I've got Janet here. We'll
copies.
Make copies of
okay,
everything.
What are you willing to?
Anything you
the whole
want.
Thing.
Well, the whole thing, we're happy to do it, but it might take
some
a while.
Color, if you can get some
yeah,
color
do it in color, please.
Well, yeah, man.
And here's the statement about Chetco.
That's excess nitrogen.
We've already.
That, too.
That no, that
no,
I think
already done. No.
Christy already took
this
copies of the map.
Okay.
Okay.
This is the same area that my children were playing in before this. I can't use my riverfront anymore.
So we'll copy everything on this side and all the photos.
Okay.
And again,
good.
Color.
Color.
And this stuff.
Absolutely.
Here.
Well, I put it in the newspaper. You know, there was an article that Joan Brown wrote.
Yeah.
But she didn't put it in color.
Yeah,
she put it in black and white.
Okay.
And it doesn't really show.
No. Very good. Okay. Good information. Anything else from?
No, I just am sitting right on the road here, and I'm watching those tanker trucks run. I've talked to Paul Kennedy till I'm blue in the face. He tells me it's the seepage from my swamp.
Well, the trucks aren't seepage.
But that's what he's saying is creating my algae, is seepage from my swamp that's been there 50 plus. I mean, I'm 70. I've lived there 52 years.
Yeah,
it's never had algae in that river before. So, and you're drinking from it.
Yeah. Well,
Newport, Toledo, Siletz are all drinking from that river.
All right, good information. Certainly questions we'll be asking at DEQ. Go ahead, sir, and identify yourself for the record.
Still good morning. My name is John Sullivan. I'm a Logsdon resident, long time, over 25 years out there. I live right on the river. I can sit in my living room and look at the water. So I monitor it almost hourly.
Mm-hmm.
I became concerned approximately 10 years ago with what was transpiring out in our area. I am the longest-serving member of the Siletz Watershed Council, for your information. I have brought this to their attention, and also in the Mid-Coast. To be perfectly honest with you, we get the biggest runaround that you could ever get in politics every time we approach this subject. It's typical politics in the fact that if you don't acknowledge there's a problem, there isn't a problem. And DEQ, as purported, is supposed to be monitoring this program. Now, I'm used to run cattle. I'm a cattleman. I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to maximize their profit with the land they've got. I understand that. What set me off originally was they infringed on my well, 200-foot setback. They put biosolids on land within 150 feet of my well. I furnish water to three residents. If that well goes bad, that's three people that don't have water. The second thing was the one that was addressed by Lincoln City. That was at my insistence that they made the test. There's all kinds of regulations, but there is no enforcement of the regulations, okay? I contacted Lincoln City when they wanted to apply more biosolids out there. After I observed them putting 32 double tanker truckloads of biosolids on a pasture in 2 days, I said, gee, this looks a little excessive. Are you sure we're not overdoing this? And they said, we don't think we have a problem. I don't want you to have a problem, because if you have a problem, I have a problem. I'm downstream from you towards the river on that rock shelf she's talking about. At my insistence, they did the testing. Now, you must understand that testing is required to be done after you apply every 2 years before you do your third year. Lincoln City had been applying there 14 years and never tested the soil once. There is no enforcement. No one was seeing that they did test the soil. And that is pervasive all through that area. This can go on and on and on, but if I've got the test results from that test. The sad part of it is that they only primarily monitor nitrogen, which they want for the fertilization process. They tested at a 1 foot level and a 2 foot level. If you're using the nitrogen, the grass draws it up and you get rid of it, and that's fine. We're all happy. It turns out that they had almost double the amount of nitrogen 2 feet down than they did 1 foot down, which means it was not being utilized and it was going down on a rock shelf. And by the way, there's a 2 foot minimum depth requirement, and that whole pasture is about 14 inches deep to rock shelf. So the land doesn't meet it. No one is monitoring, and that's the biggest problem we have. There is no monitoring on this system. And I have talked to Paul Kennedy. I've had him on my deck at my house. The problem is this. The cities must get rid of their waste. They have no choice. The farmer wants fertilizer. It's real nice for he gets free fertilizer delivered and spread. Now, who is supposed to set these boundaries up? You can write them up there all day long in writing, but if no one enforces them, it doesn't make any difference. The people that are setting the stakes out for applications are the landowners themselves, not DEQ and not the city. The landowner wants maximum coverage on his property, so he's fudging all the time. I've had meetings, tried to resolve this from a local point of view. I've met with the Toledo City Manager. I've talked to the Toledo City Mayor. I've talked to the Public Works Director in Toledo. I've met with two city councilmen. I've met with a Lincoln County Solid Waste Disposal person. I've talked to Lincoln City when they ever had their problems. I tried to come up with a solution that would be acceptable to all. I understand that we all have a problem and we want to get rid of it. So I propose that we put a Class A plant in here in Lincoln County that everybody could bring their biosolids to. They could be processed into a commercial fertilizer and sold safely. I can't get anybody to work together. These cities won't even talk to each other.
I think that's what Lincoln City's doing. So I think
Lincoln City has already converted theirs to dry patties, and they're transporting them to Corvallis and putting in a landfill.
Okay, well.
They are not, no, that's not a Class A plant.
Okay.
I think Newport may be the only
Newport has the only Class A plant, yes.
I think that's right.
And most recently, they're trying to, Newport now wants to go up and put their Class A up there also. So
Wayne, I got a question for you. One of the, and I've been through this and fought clear to the federal government on my own dollar issue and wound up losing. The question is not so many times, it's what's the penalty if you violate the law? You put the law in the book, but you then don't have a penalty that's severe enough to prevent people from doing it. And in the case of a state agency, it's hard to get them penalized, or a federal agency. So it looks like to me we need to examine what the penalties are to an agency for violation. And then that is something that is a correctable item for us, either at the legislative level, and that will solve the problem. And get, when they start to see a penalty that's severe enough, then they'll move toward correction of violations.
I could go on and on there. DEQ is not meeting their obligation in any way. One of the statements was, well, if we're going to put some more permits out, we notify the community for community comment. That is not true. They do not do that.
We'll be asking DEQ some
questions. I'm not trying to cut you off, but we're trying to limit comments to five minutes. Well, I would like a couple more minutes, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I've talked to Paul Kennedy, and he, to my face, I asked him, Paul, what is the problem? Why can't we resolve this? And his answer was, funds. They do not have the funds to hire the people to do the monitoring that they're tasked to do. Paul Kennedy lives in Medford. He is a representative for the entire coast of Oregon. You think he can monitor every field out here? I don't think there is no monitoring taking place. The in regards to the previously addressed algae in the river, this has been addressed by DEQ. Just for your information, that the Sluts River is on the list, DEQ list, for contamination. Also, most of this biosolids, not all, but most of the biosolids are put in the upper part of the canyon. You have all these cities, Newport included, drawing their water out of the Sluts River. We can't even get them to move the biosolids below the water intakes to try to keep safety for the people. You might know that this algae is really caused by excess nitrogen and phosphorus. It gets into the water. Now, the other side of that picture is that when that dies, it consumes oxygen. When it consumes oxygen, that's the oxygen the fish need in the river. We're not going to have any fish. We don't have any fish. What happens to some of our monetary inputs around here, such as our fishermen, our tourists, etc.? It infects the entire community. It's not just a few people up in Logsdon. You're talking about your water source for drinking, and you're talking about your tourism in this county. So you better start looking at it from a bigger perspective. This is not just little Logsdon. This is the county that's being affected, and it could certainly be a health problem here in the near future. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you for your comments. Obviously, enforcement and the penalties are the biggest concern. Others that would like to address the commissioners? Again, I'll ask you to try to limit your comments to 5 minutes so that we have an opportunity for everyone. Welcome back.
My name's Alan Davis. We've owned land 31 years, Upper Logsdon Valley. We own timberland, river frontage. Mm-hmm. And first of all, Mr. Belmont, you only told the half truth. That was stalled for 6 years in court, which would give us a lot of time to figure out new studies, what's going on. You don't want to tell the half truth. All right. First of all, here I go. I'm not a very good speaker, but this will interest you, Terry, because it's about the fisheries. Anyway, it's about a little mussel. In the Sluts River in 1978, they did a study. Carnan and Molman did a study, and they found over 100,000 river mussels per 400 meters square, right?
Yep.
All right, they had a meeting in 2001 because concerned citizens. The mussels all disappeared. Fish and game, we don't have an explanation. They're gone. All right, because the species is so sedentary and sensitive to environmental changes and long-lived, they live up to 100 years old. So
even older.
Oh, even older,
it's
okay,
one of
I stand correct.
It's living things on animals on the planet.
Okay, I stand correct. It can be an excellent biological indicator of water quality. Point being, they take nutrients out, contaminants out, and shows our water quality. We didn't listen to them. These little mussels were showing us in 2001 we had a water quality problem. Nobody listened. Second point, the mussels are lazy. They have no way to get upriver. They hook up onto our salmon, to their gill slits and their fins, and they take a hitchhike up the river so they can continue their lifespan. All right. Now I'm going to move on to biosolids, give you a little lesson. Ammonia is a colorless gas, nitrogen highly soluble in water, been used in over 70 years, and oxidation results from it. It's nitrate, and a nitrate comes from it. These have been known to dissolve oxygen in our water, which is not good. We knew this. Mid-Coast River listed failing dissolved oxygen criteria in 2001 by DEQ. They knew about it. The criteria, spawning. Okay. 2004, they knew about the pollutants, arsenic, you know, cadmium, chromium, copper, lead, mercury, molybdenum, nickel, selenium, and zinc. They knew that was all in our, you know, going through our water, right? All the water we drink. Okay, 2004, the EPA announced, due to pressure by Clean Water Council, it announced there's also, we might regulate it in 2004. There's also found in sewage sludge, biosolids, acetones, beryllium, carbon disulfide, chlorine. There's a list goes on. There's like 15, 16 more. You can copy this if you want to read it. They're still trying to decide whether they should, you know, add that on the list. They have it. Even though they said it's a potential health hazard to the people, EPA. EPA also said, 2003, we're not going to regulate dioxins. We know it's in the water. Director Nancy Stoner of the EPA. We're not going to direct. We know what dioxins are, right? Agent Orange, you know, stuff like that. Chemical sprays that we spray over our water, next to our lands, drains off into our water supply. That's all dioxins. It's toxins, you know? Okay. And it gets even better. They also found radial chelate, which is a radioactive form in these solids. So has anybody took a Geiger counter out here and seen how much radioactive is in these fields? Don't think so. That's also in our water, according to the EPA. Okay. Now we go on to the Selats River. Okay, this is a letter from, let me get this right here, Sherry Stewart from Oregon DEQ. She goes, this is to Alan Midda, the director of the Selats Watery Place in Selats.
You know Alan.
He says, we found out you have arsenic, chlorophyll, copper, lead, sedimentation, selenium, zinc. Potential concern is also alkaline, ammonia, chloride, dissolved oxygen, pH, phosphate, and phosphorus. We're all drinking all this. Yum. Wonder how many, that's why you have a high rate of cancer in the area? Probably. All right. And that's where they came with that. And problem with pH, I don't know, do you guys know anything about pH? Terry probably does.
I know pH.
Well, when you get up to pH and it starts raising, and we've checked some of the past records, it got up to 8.85. After 9, you just eradicated the species. They're gone forever and never will come back. And there's a record of it. I think it's 2013 or 2003. There's a 300. You can look. It's in the records. And we took a test just yesterday. One up by Logston is 8. One down at Twin Bridges was 7. The thing of it is, it's still cold water yet. When this heats up, that stuff's gonna go boom, it's gonna shoot back up. Okay, and here's what I think what's going on right now, the laws that are being violated. We believe laws are being violated since the Selats River under, let me find this one, it's a critical act area. It's a critical area set aside by the United States government, Fish and Wildlife. It considers Selats water basin critical for the coho life, for the cohos. With this, pH is rising, you're gonna kill them off. Then they're gone. And they're gone, and then the mussels, then everything else is gone with them. Okay, we believe the critical habitat of the coho Endangered Threatened Act of 1973 is being violated. We also believe the Substantial Fishery Act of 1996 is also being violated. We also believe the violation of the 1996 Safe Drinking Act is also being violated. And I have been in touch with Noah, and I will get, you know, and the hero of the story is this little muscle that pulled us off. And we were too stupid to listen.
Well,
thank you.
We're listening now. Thank you.
I hope so. And you do have the power to stop this immediately, because Washington State did it and installed it for 6 years in court. So don't tell me you don't have it. Do your research, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan. Next, and again, for the record, please identify yourself.
My name is Abigail DeYoung, and I'm a local here. I know Terry vaguely. We've met a few times.
Yeah.
I've never met the rest of you, so I'm here really to just introduce myself. And me and my husband own a couple of businesses here. He has the Ocean Pulse Surf Shop, and then we started like a charter and an eco-tour company. So I have Northwest Eco-Tours. And then we do businesses.
Could the audience hold their comments or talk afterward, please, so we can hear Abigail?
I can get closer to the microphone, I guess.
Again, we'll gather all the information, but let's respect the people that are at the podium.
Thank you. So we've got Ocean Pulse, we've got Northwest Eco Tours, and we have All Depth Charters. And I heard about this biosolids issue just recently, just from a random post I caught on Facebook. But it concerns me a lot, as well as the entire health of the Sluts watershed, because I don't think that we've been doing this individual species management for a long time, and it doesn't work. And we can see that from coho. So they've been a protected species for how long now? And they're still not a commercial fishery again. And so we have to start addressing the environment and doing conservation for the entire watershed, not just one species or one section of the river or anything. And the Sluts is, I eat the fish out of there, I feed it to my family, you know, it's really a big problem. Also, the drinking water. And so I have a couple questions for you guys. One, which John answered, which was the financial compensation. I was like, why would farmers want this on their field? Well, it benefits them financially, and they're obviously getting compensated. So that is done. I also wanted to know if there was any kind of DEQ breakdown of the concentration of trace things, and are they even looking for things in biosolids like birth control, prescription drugs, non-prescription drugs? So those things,
Go ahead. Amy, I believe, has some answers, but finish with your questions, and then we'll get Amy.
I looked at the clean, you know, water breakdown and for the Sluts, and it just didn't seem complete to me, like they were looking for enough stuff. So I'd like to, you know, address that. I also have worked for Soil and Water, the Lincoln Soil and Water, and did the water quality testing for a couple years, and I know that the DEQ is seriously underfunded and seriously understaffed, and that data that I was getting, they couldn't even really do anything with it. And we're like, what are you doing with this data? Also, you know, compiling it for 15 years, apparently. And then I'm wondering, you know, the DEQ put that robot in the Sluts that did automatic water testing, and they kind of cut the funding for, you know, the SWCD's water testing program. But do you know where that little robot is? Is it up by the intake for the drinking water on the Sluts?
I assumed it was above the intake at the water mark, but I was just
some question for DEQ.
There were five spots starting at Moonshine down. My property was, I volunteered to have a test on my own property. Yeah.
Right. You still don't know what the results were, though.
Right. So that, and then I am sitting here listening to this problem, and I'm thinking, well, we need to figure out what to do with these biosolids instead of spreading them on fields. So, I mean, maybe a Class A, like, you know, sewage processing plant, maybe like a biofuel plant, something could potentially be done with it, because the problem isn't going to go away, because there's always going to be human waste. So that's really all I have to say, is just that I'm concerned and I would like to know more, and I think that we should all definitely figure out how to tackle this problem as a community, because it affects my living and my drinking water, so.
So, Amy, you indicated you might have some information.
You're
but again, I think these are questions for DEQ, but certainly. I'm not trying to duck the issue, but DEQ is the one that's doing the work and not sharing the information with us, if they're doing the work.
The EPA, here's some information.
Okay.
And the EPA does test biosolids in a research way to see what's in it. The EPA is a place to go to find out what they're testing biosolids for and what their results are.
Another underfunded
agency. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. Anyone else?
Is it too late for me to add my name?
No. Anyone? Again, I ask you to try to limit your comments to 5 minutes so we respect each individual's time.
My name is Dave Wilson. I'm a resident out of Logsdon. That was a real nice presentation that Amy gave. I could probably go through slide by slide and tell you where a lot of that is fake information. The monitoring that they talk about and the soil samples that they talk about, if you go to each one of those communities and ask for those soil samples, you won't get those soil samples. They're probably not being taken. So the other issue, it was brought up earlier, the weather conditions, that these are being applied in August. I sat here over the Mother's Day weekend, 11 straight days, Depot Bay, two tanker trucks, probably six trips a day for 11 days, spread on the Mann property up by Moonshine Park. And during that period of time, it rained. So, and last year, they spread up there in the same meadow right next to that. It rained during that period too. Now, right before Depot Bay spread theirs, there's some property that's right next to John Sullivan's house. Toledo spread on that property. It rained. And as we were coming to town today, this is a separate issue, the shrimp carcasses, for some reason, they like to be taken out to the Logsdon area too and dumped. The same property that Toledo dumped their biosolids on, that's been within, what, 3 weeks, John? The shrimp carcasses are going on that property today. Okay. Some of these application rates that were in Amy's presentation, the application rate is 100 pounds per acre. Okay, on top of that, they're supposed to take into effect the manure that the cattle put on there or any fertilizer they put on there. That 100 pounds per acre is the maximum that's supposed to be put on that property. Nobody's taking into account what the cattle are putting on there too. The Mann property, he puts a lot of cattle in there on that property, okay? The other issue, the algae, John and I just did the river cleanup, that's been probably a couple of weeks ago. We were amazed at the algae in the river. We traveled from Twin Bridges down to Sillette's, and the algae was just, it was amazing. Last year, we traveled that same area, and I don't remember seeing that much algae. Now, I'm not saying that's the biosolids that's doing that. There could be other issues. You know, the weather, climate change could be part of that too. But we can't do anything about the climate change. We might be able to do something about the biosolids. Another slide that Amy showed, they said there was no shallow wells in those areas. Well, I'm here to tell you that there are shallow wells, and they're not coming out of a confined aquifer in that bedrock. Most of those wells are taking their water right off the top of that bedrock. I live right across the road from the Weisskopfer property. And as John said, on that property, the rock layer is pretty close to the surface. Okay, my well is down gradient from that field. So my water's coming right off the top of that rock layer. And I know a lot of those other wells in that area are too. So that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you.
I do have, this is a letter to the editor that I submitted, but I went over their 300 words, so I had to condense it, but this is my original letter.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. A little bit of the information I just told you.
Well, again, you emphasize that what the regulations say and what reality is seems to be a big difference.
You know, in a perfect world, you know, all that stuff would get done. But we do not live in a perfect world.
Right. No, I agree. Anyone else? I say Kayleen.
Hi.
For the record.
Thanks for listening to me again.
For the record, please introduce yourself.
My name's Kayleen Davis, and this is actually my second trip to a commissioner meeting, third trip. We also did the planning meeting before that. Well, as you've heard from lots of people, and I don't think there's much sense for me going back over it, they're not watching it. Nobody. So, and the cities are supposed to be monitoring, but that's really, I don't... They're supposed to have grids. You think grids of where they spread this? I did a video of them spreading. It's not solids, like John said. It's liquid. It was sprayed. The video is public. It's out there. It's on the Save Our Solettes page, along with lots of posts. We've had a lot of community response on this. We've had over 3,000 hits. Lots of them shared. Letter Paul Kennedy wrote me. I shared it. And so I'm sorry, Amy, but it was kind of, you know, ironic to me. Most of the things you were reading to us, he wrote to me in a letter. But they didn't really do it. And I told him about the rain, but he didn't seem that concerned. So yeah, I did file a complaint, and I filed two complaints so far. The biosolids are on the road. The trucks aren't being cleaned. We've got pictures. So, you know, if the DEQ isn't regulating it, the city's not regulating it. But, you know, out there in Logsdon, I thought we were county. So I thought the county was watching that for us. So that's hence why I've come here, why we've come here. Didn't, you know? I thought it was county. Where's environmental health? You know, I worked for Head Start for years. I had a concern about water and small children were playing in it. City of Toledo wasn't doing anything about it. I called environmental services, got somebody on the phone that day. The next day, instead of, you know, yellow caution tape that 3 and 4 and 5 and 6-year-olds are not reading, they came out and pumped that water out. We need solutions. We need somewhere else to go. But because we don't know what else to do with it, it can't keep coming out the farmland. Howard Weisbiber is, well, he's elderly, late 80s, early 90s. Here's his first agreement. You know, this was done in 97, I believe. There's others dating back to 94. Once a farmer has a permit, it's good forever. That's what Paul Kennedy told me, good forever. So then he quit dumping on Lincoln City because of the biosolids being spread, correct, John? And the shrimp dumping on the same field. I hear on a field that's his upper field, that field boards us. Nobody's ever contacted us. I can guarantee you that. So Lincoln City quit, not because, you know, they're going to start, they had to. There was up the 90% saturation rate. So I'm guessing 2 years ago they quit. 2015, Otter Rock started a new one with him. So he has a new permit. He's still going. Shrimp truck's still dumping. Jeff Mann gets a penny a gallon, so from Depot Bay, so he's profited quite well. There is a committee, and it's changed its name lots of times. I think this is now the Mid-Coast Inflammation Ready. Local stakeholders, sometimes it's called stakeholders, sometimes it's called shareholders committee. Technical work groups, and now it's called Inflammation Ready for the TDML. Well, you know, this committee has changed its names a whole bunch of times, and while the forms are out there publicly, they're not easy to find and they're moving them. So I had a little bit of trouble finding some of them. Maybe they've I know with Head Start. I worked for the courts for about 10 years. We changed ODOT systems a few times. We've changed systems. I know how that is. So then all the paper gets lost, and you have to start switching over to a new system. But back in, let's see, 2009 was the last I saw this committee had met. But they didn't reconvene because, well, there were stakeholders that had issues, specific issues. Doesn't say what the specific issues are, maybe the biosolids, maybe the spraying. From there, okay, this is January 11th, they met again. And then it goes on, and they had some meetings, I guess. And then January 17th, they met again. And, you know, the projected development of these team DLs, they seem to keep getting rolled. It started 2014, 2000. Now they were 2017. They were supposed to be done in the summer. Now I see it's 2018. They don't know what else to do with it. And nobody's watching us. I don't want to redo and keep going over this, but we don't have time to keep waiting for these tests. They're out there. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife are doing them. ODF's doing them. I mean, there's different people doing these tests, the DEQ, but I couldn't find their actual site where they have all their tests done, but they're there. Food safety, well, there's a lot of information out there on biocides and food safety. I'll give you these if you were interested, but sure. There's lots.
Happy to take it.
Okay, go to you. So we did get supports and more signatures. I'm going to resubmit our request because I think there is. And yeah, they did. After 6 years, they threw that case out. But for 6 years, it wasn't applied. That gives 6 years to figure out something else to do. It can't keep coming to Logsdon. It's obviously killing the river. We took pictures of the algae yesterday. That didn't grow there. I grew up on this river. We moved to this river when I was 12. My husband and I bought our place 27 years ago. We raised our baby son, all the girls on this river. We've taken our grandchildren. We have a great-grandbaby coming. I want to be able to take that great-grandbaby. I want to keep taking our babies there. There was never moss growing in our place. It's there. I have a daughter who doesn't get the heebie-jeebies. She doesn't have any problem with grabbing a cow by and throwing it for a frisbee. She walks right. All of a sudden, in a place she's always walked before, she starts jumping and ew, 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 and I'm laughing at her. What's wrong with you? There's this long, stringy, icky stuff on my legs. It's never been here before. It's the algae. Again, I don't know if the specialist can help us where that came from. I don't know. And the drinking water. I mean, come on. It's the people's drinking water. Your guys' drinking water. The food. The hay. Nobody's telling them what's getting this. I started to collect all the charts. I worked on this until about 1:30 last night and thought, you know, they're there. They're public. Amy pointed that out. This isn't our job. Come on. Let's all work together and just get it stopped. When I was collecting signatures, I had a small child. I asked, you know, I was telling his mom and we explained what's going on. And that little boy looked at me and said, why would anybody do that? I don't know. I guess because we don't know what else to do, but it's really not okay to kill the river. How many other rivers are in trouble now? The Columbia, you know, Oregon Sioux and Monsanto for their fertilizer. I've talked to the city of Toledo, and then the last time Cindy George is not here, but she talked about cross-contamination in their sewage. Now, I don't know if this is true, and this is not my expertise, but come on, is that being checked? Maybe somebody could ask them.
We would.
As John pointed out, they're not measuring, and this is up to the farmers. And if you really look at the regulations, if you get down to the farmers' regulations, I do believe it's probably supposed to be more like 200 feet. So, you know, they're not supposed to do in high times of precipitation, not supposed to have that cattle on there for 30 days. They have lots of rules, but it's up to the honesty of the farmer to do them because nobody watches. So when next time I see the sewage on the road and I have a concern that, you know, maybe we have children out there, guess what? He's right next to Moonshine Park. And they walk on the road. You know what kids like to do? They like to walk barefoot. So when I see these biosolids on the road, I report it to the DEQ because that's what I did, but that didn't solve the immediate problem. Or our tourism, you know, the tourists going to Moonshine. Maybe, should I call the sheriff? I mean, who should come clean up these biosolids so a child, an animal, doesn't walk through them? Nobody?
Question.
I don't know. Yeah.
The cities are the ones that are spreading.
Right, but the cities are the ones spreading, but it's a county road. Yeah, so I get confused too. So, and this, I guess, you know, we can't undo what's been done. I mean, the wrong is done, it's happened, it's there. We have to move forward. And there's grants. Did I hear Newport already has a machine, has the incinerator? Is that what I heard?
Process.
Is it something that, you know, the other cities can share? I'm not the expertise in this, like by any means, but can we share? Can we think of another way? In the meantime, cities, I guess the cities are responsible for this. Maybe they should look at within their own city boundaries. So I know you said that, you know, that you can't do anything, but for a second
we didn't say we can't do anything.
You don't think, okay, I correct myself. I'm sorry.
No, I just think it's important to understand that we're doing what we can.
I understand that.
I don't mean to correct you. I think I don't want there to be a bad perception that we're, we can't do anything. We are doing what we can.
And I don't know. I hear that you can, you know. And then the unawareness and, you know, the... There's a lot of people on the county and cities on this board and have been through the years, and John's been on this board. Uno is on the board?
The TMDL?
TMDL, right. I realized when I asked you the questions, I called you and Roy, I wasn't aware of this information, so I only asked for permission. That's all you answered me on.
Kayleen, can I ask you to kind of wrap it up?
Sure.
Yeah.
So, given all that and the community response and the safety and welfare for all the people in our community, and the tourists that like to visit. Budget item, if I could do one more budget item. Right across from the Logs and Storage, have you seen what the road is dropping? County Road Department, well, last year I finally wrote an email to them, and then the next day they fixed it. But it had dropped, you know, about this far. It's doing it again. Those trucks.
By the church.
Yeah, right by the church. The trucks are taking a toll on that road. So this is our second submittal of a formal request for the immediate cease and desist of all distributing of biosolids in and around the Siletz River and surrounding watershed. Now, with inclusion of the attached addendums and additional evidence presented today by our neighbors, friends, and also in hard copy here, presenting the proven and devastating impact caused by the applications of the treated sewage biosolids on the farmlands along the Siletz River and all those that rely on it. Addendum supporting and showing further community support, signature pages, and again the outpour on Facebook. I had a technical difficulty. I also had a page where people were coming in, they were adding their names, and I had a lot of names, but I couldn't get that to print this morning. Additional information of the county, state, city awareness, you know. It's not like they aren't aware that they were working on doing something. Local stakeholder advisory committee, I discussed that. And the fact that, so I'll just read it. These updates committees related to my ones online under different names dating back to 2009. They did not meet for 2 years and reconvened in 2011. The committee has postponed to make timeline on the TMDLs. Total maximum daily load. Took me a while for that one. For the river, for years. In the meantime, many agencies are doing tests. There are lots of tests out there. And they show the dangers. EPA, DEQ, state, county agencies are aware of the dangers. And yet, for years, they continue to count millions of gallons of this treated biosolids on these fields.
Can you try to wrap it up,
and, okay. And they never, any of the permits never expire. So again, for the health and safety of the community and all living creatures that rely on it, we the people ask you, the commissioners, or whomever has the power, to demand and cease and desist of spreading the biosolids on the farmlands of the Siletz River.
Mr. Chairman, yes. If I might, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you gentlemen for listening to us today and our concerns and for whatever help you can give us, because we haven't got any help from any place else. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that enhanced the frustration.
I have one other thing. I did some research and Noah said once a river has been polluted, it takes years and years and might never ever come back. So obviously that's coming back, not really good if we don't stop this.
Well, we have lots of questions for DEQ. We will be getting representatives of DEQ, and I think one of the most important ones is David Bayet, who is the Western Region Administrator for DEQ, so he would be one of the top guys. We'll continue to ask questions about enforcement. Certainly the issue of penalties is something that we can try to address. I, as I said, have been working with Representative Gomberg, and we'll have him continue to keep him involved. And of course, He's important because as a member of the House, he's the one that is part of the process that sets the budget for DEQ. And we'll continue to look at some of the legal aspects. And again, we hear you loud and clear, and I think the cities have some better ability maybe to address these issues more rapidly than we can because of the way the laws are structured and their role in it. So we hear you loud and clear.
Okay, additional information, this spreading, the time period, and I could be wrong on this, but I do believe in there somewhere in all their writing and the rules is between April and October.
We'll find out.
So I want to give you this stuff.
Hold on. Janet, will you get the information from the different people so we get copies of it?
Sure.
I'll let Commissioner Thompson speak, and then I'll recognize the gentleman in the back.
My name's Ron Ballou, and I live in the Lower Siletz.
Please come forward.
My name's Ron Ballou, and I live in the Lower Siletz River. And unfortunately, my concern is biosolids flow down river. So, you know, it's going to get there someday. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there's a couple of things. I know you have concerns on what your control is, you know, what you have the ability to do and whatever. As Mr. Thompson said earlier, you know, one of the things I'm concerned with immediately is the 50-foot rule, you know, going close to the river. If you were to allow me to put a well in, you would only allow me to put a well 200 feet from my septic or whatever. It seems to me like you should have that control to have that setback moved to that 200 foot of a water source. The Siletz River is a water source. So that could probably be addressed immediately, I would think. The other thing is, what controls the application rate? Is the application rate controlled by the monitoring, or is the monitoring controlled by the application rate? You have to look at both sides. You know, what controls that? If the application rate is X tons and requires that amount of monitoring, if you can't supply that monitoring, then you can't have that application rate, and vice versa. The third thing is, what is the high water level in that area? Flooding occurs on the Siletz. I don't know what it is up there, but I know it's a big impact downriver where I live. So that 50-foot mark or that 200-foot mark has got to be based on that high water level, not on the low water level. So I don't know. If it floods, it all goes in the river. If it doesn't, that's a different story. So there are some things I think we can address as a county immediately, because we do have some control. Not a lot, maybe, but we do have some at this point. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. We'll continue to work on that. So any other? Go, Commissioner Thompson.
So you keep mentioning Gomberg, but Arnie Roblin's our senator, and he's been at this for longer, and I worked with him clear back in watershed councils and things like this. And Oregon Salmon Plan is nothing more than a clean water bill. Mm-hmm. And this is an example. I don't know how this fell through the cracks at this level and hasn't been picked up. But you guys talking about the Siletz watershed, that's your problem. But if you're going to fix it, you're going to have to try to fix it statewide, because I'm sure there's other watersheds too. You can't just have them say your watershed and then move on to another one. This is a big challenge, and it's not going to be easy. But I've been involved in this my whole life, and I'm impressed by your compelling evidence. But when you go to take this forward, you're going to have to boil it down to a few items, and you have to target the items rather than going in such a broad-based approach. I appreciate the fact that in order to be effective in the legislature, or to go where this is going to have to go, we have to boil it down to a few specific items, and then also bring up what we've mentioned before, is how do you correct it? I mean, it's got to be correctable. And this is just a start on a process of a long process, but
I'm amazed at the testimony that you guys have brought forward.
Very impressive. Could I ask a question to Mr. Belmont?
Sure.
Could we do a little more research into that county in Washington State that did establish the local ban? And my research, they passed it in 2011. The State Court of Appeals overturned it in 2014, 3 years.
They did, and what they had was an intermediary step in which a inferior court on a challenge upheld the injunction.
Right.
My opinion is you'd never get a court here to do that. But that being said, there may be some other legal things we could do. We've talked about it. I really appreciate it. I'll tell you this. The information, and I will be asking for more information about the non-compliance with the laws that exist now, that is a different basis on which we might be able to do
enforcement
issue. So that actually gives us some other tools, different kinds of tools. So for the folks that have been providing that information, I really appreciate it. If you want to, you know, inundate me with that, and especially we're looking for factual stuff, that if you've got evidence that said that they were to apply, you know, within 200 feet and they applied it within 100 feet. The evidence that it being out on a road, spilling out on a road, the very specific, the more specific and better information.
We have evidence if you go to save Sled's River.
Okay.
I'll send you the link.
And then, John, you had some information in there. And I may be coming back to talk to you about that, because there's where there may be some tools we have, because they're not complying with the existing law. Then there may be some things we can do. So,
and Wayne,
different strategy.
If we can show that non-compliance, then we have a chance to go to the legislature, who does have the authority to create the penalties so that they will comply with the regulations. There's several steps we've got to do here to make this thing work.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Well, we don't want to comply. We want to stop, because you're endangering the coho salmon. And that's against the federal laws.
We can prove that they're not doing it right.
That may give us more leverage.
We need to work together and get something so we can resolve this waste or it don't hurt the environment. I mean, that's what I think everybody wants.
Yeah. Yep. I don't think
we just don't want it on our field. And it's Oregon, it's a nation's problem.
We hear you.
Yeah, just what Terry said, and I thank you, Terry.
Thanks.
But it's not just our problem. I mean, it's the county. You know, it's all our water.
Well, statewide.
Yes.
It's a statewide problem.
It's
actually, it's a nation problem. Right.
Any last comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
We can write letters to our representatives to our blue in the face, but what we need is somebody with some political clout, and like you.
We've already indicated we're talking to those people.
That's what I want, some assurance.
We'll continue to do so, and you've provided us with good evidence to help the cause.
I've spent 22 years working on exactly these kinds of issues.
So again, I'm not trying to cut you off, but I think we've heard from everybody. We hear you loud and clear. And we're going to be moving forward as best we can on trying to correct the issue.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Thank you.
Welcome. All right, we'll move on, Commissioner Report.
Well, no, one more thing on this subject.
Yes, sure.
If we could ask Mr. Belmont, if he thinks that a more stringent local setback requirement would be legally defensible, at very least. Again, there's still the enforcement question, but at least to make that as a statement on the record.
Well, you're too quick. Yeah. You've got to get the state in here and get their side of testimony.
Yes.
Okay.
But I'd like to think about that.
Here's a little information about the setback.
Mm-hmm.
The DEQ claims to have a 200-foot setback.
I think the administrative rule says 200 feet from a water source, but 50 feet from a waterway. That's in the administrative rule.
We need to get DEQ in here and find out. We need to find out. All right. Anything else? All right. I'll move forward to commissioner reports.
I'm going to pass this time.
I'll just mention a couple of things very briefly, Mr. Chair. I was in Salem first thing yesterday morning for an appearance at the Senate Rules Committee, and I have been appointed to the State Housing Council, so very honored to have that opportunity to continue my advocacy locally and statewide on increasing our housing supply. I'll be back there tomorrow. The Council of State Governments is convening a behavioral health criminal justice forum, and trying to promote, there's teams from every county that have been invited. I'm part of the Lincoln County team, and trying to promote
a lot of the principles and aims of the Stepping Up initiative to get better cooperation at the state level on trying to steer people away from the justice system and toward treatment.
Okay. I'll just quickly report. I attended the forest and farm tour yesterday, and it was interesting to see new technology where they're cutting to length is the technology, and it enables harvesting of trees under circumstances which weren't available or financially feasible until the new technology. So with that, again, we've already done constituent input. Thank you all for your patience. Thank you for your comments, and we've got some tough questions we'll be asking DEQ and other representatives and working with you to try to address, correct the errors and enforce the rules. So, anything else?
I have one question. When would we know this at the next meeting?
We'll publicize when DEQ is here. It'll be part of the agenda, and we'll make sure there's a press release that lets people know.
Okay,
we may try
I'm
to.
I'll be back.
Yeah, we'd like to.
We'll get them here as soon as they're available.
We'll get them, yep, as soon as we can, and we'll make sure that we publicize that agenda as we do all. And
just one, is there any more materials anybody has today they want us to have a copy of? We can do some copying.
Can I meet with you and show you?
Yeah, would you want to just, in fact, if you want to just go in the out the door and through this door, Janet will help you.
Okay.
And try and make copies of those.
Okay.
That'd be great.
All right.
Thank you.
So let's go this way. Go ahead and go this way. Go left and then immediate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Left and immediate left.
Appreciate everybody coming forward. And let's see, we have no executive session. The next meeting of the Board of Commissioners will be Wednesday, May 30th at 8:30 a.m. right here in the Board of Commissioners room. There is also a county budget committee meeting tonight in Toledo. It was originally to be held in the City Hall, but it's been moved across the street to the Council of Government meeting. That'll be the third meeting of the County Budget Committee, and it'll be at 6 o'clock in Toledo. So that's tonight. Next board meeting a week from today. With that, we're adjourned.